Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's studios in Prague. President Shaukat Mirziyayev is on his way to Washington, D.C. The visit includes the White House and a meeting with top officials, including President Trump. But that's all we know. The question is what he is looking for in America and what our American interests are in Tashkent and where their priorities meet and where do they contradict. In the absence of detailed information about his trip, we have a very informed panel to ponder around these questions. From Washington, D.C., we have Nobahar Imamova, an Uzbek journalist and anchor with the Uzbek service of Voice of America. From, I believe, somewhere in Eastern Europe, we have Alisher Sadiq, also from Uzbekistan, who is the director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service. Here in the studio, I have Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. And Alisher, let's start with you. So what is your insight to his agenda?
That's a very interesting question. And I don't know whether that was made public at this point, but on official level, we just hear that he wants, this is his first trip. I mean, this is his first visit to, I believe, if you don't count his visit to United Nations, to New York.
Yeah.
So that will be his first visit ever to Western country. So that will be, in my opinion, more or less introductory visit, you know, like to introduce himself, to show himself to Washington, you know, and express in more or less openness for future cooperation. And he doesn't have this, you know, like grim background Karimov used to have. So there are a lot of U.S. businesses in Uzbekistan. And that could be much more, and the investment potential is very, very huge. So he will be offering Uzbekistan for potential U.S. investors, and how extent he will be successful, that's another question, of course.
Business, you know, we heard this from all the Uzbek delegations who have been visiting Washington, D.C. since Mirziyayev took office. So, Nobahar, what the U.S. officials are interested to hear from Mirziyayev, what they are waiting to hear from him?
Well, Americans are anxiously and excitedly are waiting for him, for Mirziyayev. They know that this is going to be a historic trip. This is going to be a breakthrough in many ways. You know, he has never gone to the West, as Alisher just mentioned. So this will be his first official visit to a Western country. And starting that from the United States has a lot of strategic, obviously, importance and significance. So the State Department is very excited about it. The White House has been actually, specifically the National Security Council has been working on this for several months now. As you know, President Trump and President Mirziyoyev have talked over the phone late last year. That's when they invited each other to their, you know, countries. And so this has been in the works for a long time. And in many ways, the visit is an achievement, I think, for both sides, because...
Nobahar, can you interrupt you? Like you said, you interpreted in a way like it's a kind of breakthrough and U.S. officials are excited. So breakthrough in what terms, and also excited about what?
Yes, well, first of all, you know, Uzbekistan has been this country in the eyes of Washington for a long time, in the eyes of the wider Washington. Uzbekistan has been, you know, one of the worst regimes in the world. Yes, we have to work with this country. We have specific interests. We have a transactional relationship. But this was a bad country. This was a bad regime. And now you have this emerging leader who wants to be seen as a reformer, who's trying very hard in the eyes of Washington again to prove that he is a change maker. So Washington has so far supported Mirziyoyev's actions. They've been praising him all along. And to see an Uzbek leader visit Washington, the last time you had a president from Uzbekistan in town was in 2004. So, you know, this is like White House hasn't had anyone from Tashkent for a long time. And you have a new president here in the United States who's promising a lot. And you have a very promising president in Tashkent. So their meeting is seen as a, as a breakthrough. Whoever you talk to here in town, even the most critical people will tell you that, wow, you know, this is amazing. Nazarbayev's, you know, Kazakh president's visit was something, but Uzbek president visiting is definitely going to be a remarkable event. Secondly, he wants to have a very solid security relationship with the United States. So his visit to the Pentagon is going to be critical. We may see some new deals in terms of military assistance, in terms of border security and other issues, counter narco traffic, and other issues that Pentagon really cares about. And then he will also have a visit to the World Bank that was announced later. He will be meeting with several members of the U.S. Congress. Mm-hmm. So there will be receptions there. And obviously, you know, long conversations with the members of the State Department. But his meeting for 2 hours in the White House on Wednesday, I think, is a really critical point. I believe that you will have most of the cabinet members in that meeting. And on Wednesday evening, there will be a huge gala at the Willard Hotel in Washington, where I believe every member of the Trump administration, I mean the cabinet member, is invited. So Uzbeks are pushing it really big here in Washington. You can't imagine how nervous they must be. I mean, they have a lot of work to do, but the preparation process, from my vantage point, has been pretty seamless, because the new ambassador, Ambassador Vahabov, seems to have found a pretty good common language with the folks in Washington. And they've been, I see them incredibly active.
Wow, Nobahar, you give us a lot to discuss, Bruce.
For bombarding you.
Yeah,
with all this.
Bruce, start from some points. 2 hours long meeting at the White House, visit to Pentagon. Help us to understand this.
This is MAGA meets MUGA, isn't it? Although in Uzbekistan's case, I suppose it's make Uzbekistan great. There wasn't, not again, but finally. So, sir, you know, I would say that probably the Pentagon visit is going to be the most substantial. We know that the U.S. has an agreement with Kazakhstan to ship goods to the Aktau port. And from there, it's going to go by rail, undoubtedly through Uzbekistan, I imagine, and into Afghanistan. So that's something the Pentagon is going to want to firm up, the cooperation with the Uzbek government on that. You know, and you never know what kind of investment. Generally, there's not going to be, I would say there probably won't be a huge amount of investment coming from the U.S., but I do remember that GM opened its plant, you know, and not long before Hillary Clinton, when she was Secretary of State, made a visit there. You know, it's possible we could have a surprise that someone in the Trump administration will push some business leaders to try to invest in Uzbekistan. But I would say most importantly, if they play this right, it's certainly been common knowledge in the United States and in previous administrations and in the State Department that Uzbekistan is a key country in Central Asia to have relations with, because it borders everybody else. It's got the biggest population. You know, this is someone that you really want on your side. And you know, Karimov, for the first 10 years after independence, even more than that, he certainly wanted to be great friends with the United States.
And it was, I believe.
Yeah, but the problem was that his regime was so horrifying that the U.S. found it harder and harder to keep close to him. So this is an opportunity for the U.S. to revisit some of its policies from the early 90s, mid-90s, actually, and try to get a good relationship with Uzbekistan, understanding that, like I said, that's the key country in Central Asia to have relations with. Everything kind of radiates out from there.
Mm-hmm. Alisher Nobahar gave an example of earlier discussion between Nazarbayev and President Trump at the White House. And we remember what was the exact wording of President Trump after that meeting took place, that he was talking about the billions of dollars that this meeting is going to bring to the United States. So in Trump administration, the discussion is not that how much money America is going to invest in some country, but how much money that a foreign leader is going to bring to America, how many jobs that it's going to create here. So how much money Mirziyoyev is coming with to the United States?
I don't know. Maybe he's... what are those questions today, Muhammad? I mean, how would I know how much money he would have in his pocket?
No, you also mentioned, Alisher, remember, you also mentioned that, you know, business deals, all these things are in his mind. So
I mean, I just hope he will not fly on Russian oligarch Alisher Usmanov's plane this time. So that's kind of the biggest achievement from that point of view, yeah? So he doesn't know it yet, probably. He has his new guy. At some point, he would have to pick sides. That's what they don't say at this point, yeah? So Karimov knew it pretty well. He knew how to maneuver And so from my point of view, that would be something for the future discussion. From his side, at least, Mirziyoyev tried to do a lot of things, release all political prisoners, release journalists, you know. So he has done something, and at the same time, these things were really highly praised, like a lot of human rights kind of improvement, development.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can I jump in?
Yes, please. Please do. Hello? That. And also Nobahar, the business seems to be listening to you and Alisher's discussion, business to be on the top of at least Mirziyoyev's agenda. Now, what is that? Why did President Trump accept this meeting?
Well, first of all, I want to add that business is very much important. The business interests are very important for Tashkent, and that would be the third major goal that I would say, you know, Mirziyoyev has, you know, in this visit. Uzbeks are not begging for financial aid. That's as much as I know. They're not asking for, like, you know, major assistance package from the United States. They want working capital, and they want real know-how. So, you know, Mirziyoyev seems to have recognized that that kind of American investment, you know, will only flow if conditions in the country improve. So we have an administration in Tashkent that says, yeah, we get it. You know, we have to fix a lot of things here before there will be more flow of U.S. Investment here. But help us to get there. That's his narrative. Like, help us to get there. Help us improve. Provide technical assistance. You know, teach us know-how. So work with us. That's the approach this administration is taking. And also, I mean, Mirziyoyev is coming to Washington with some political capital, as Alisher indicated. He has, you know, he's now going to talk about how he managed to change the conversation between the government and citizens in Uzbekistan. He's going to talk about the release of political prisoners, the new approach to fighting extremism, terrorism, the way he has been reforming the security sector in the country, the way he's, you know, having this week, there are no journalists behind bars in Uzbekistan. So all these things will be mentioned. And then the Trump administration is preparing to highlight all of these changes.
Okay. Bruce, reform talks in Uzbekistan. How much effective is this? How much of a role is this playing behind President Trump's readiness to welcome him in the White House?
I think you'd have to give it a lot of importance, certainly, because even if it might not be happening as fast as a lot of us wish, or it get down to some of the areas that I wish it was getting in also. The fact is that there are reforms, you know, Nabahar mentioned, people have been, and Alisher too, people have been released from jails. You know, the economy is kind of slowly turning in the other direction and moving forward. It's an incredibly hopeful sign for anyone who's been watching Uzbekistan for the last, you know, 10 or 15 years. You got to be encouraged by what's happening there now. It seems to be pulling itself out. You know, again, I would wish for a few more reforms, you know, things that have to do with the independent media and freedom of speech and things like that. But certainly this is something that I think a lot of people in the State Department and not just even in the U.S., but in other governments are hoping is going to grow and become taken more areas of more sectors of Uzbekistan. But it's a warm welcome that the White House can extend to an Uzbek leader that it hasn't really been able to in the past, because, you know, right now Mirziyoyev seems to be doing good things. You know, they're almost exclusively all the news, you know, as mentioned, there's good news coming out of Uzbekistan, and it's coming out a lot. So it's not like in the past where, you know, when Karimov visited last time, where everyone kind of there were people who understood what Karimov's regime was all about. So while he was welcome at the White House because of the U.S. need for Uzbekistan, you know, toward its efforts in Afghanistan, the fact was there was a lot of people in the U.S., you know, who had moved from Uzbekistan, and they were opposed to and people from rights organizations, they were opposed to seeing Karimov show up and be welcomed at the White House. But I don't think there's going to be that kind of objection this time. I think generally people are going to be happy to see the Uzbek leader going and meeting with the U.S. president this time. And there won't be a backlash in Washington or really much opposition to this.
Okay, talking of objections, you know, this is certainly a warming relationship between Uzbekistan and a super, super power in the world the way it stands today. So how is this seen, Alisher, from Moscow?
Yeah, I mean, they just, I think at this point, they're giving, him a little of freedom of movement, yeah? So, but obviously, today's Tashkent's policy is very much pro-Moscow, you know, in many ways, in a lot of symbolic ways and in a lot of economic and real ways. So it's closer. It's, you know, you have, as I already mentioned, it's not just empty words, you know, that apparently Alisher Usmanov is playing a great role in this. So, and you know, and he's a relative of President Mirziyoyev. Mm. So Russia is there. Russia is also very much preoccupied with its own problems. You know, they have all of them now preoccupied with them, with their own problems. So in this big world, Uzbekistan is kind of probably a little bit brighter spot. Yeah. So as Nabahar said, a place which was completely hopeless, yes, all of a sudden started to show some signs of life. But on the other side, if you think deeper into Karimov's legacy, there were almost nothing that Karimov's regime wouldn't agree on with the United States. It was just a later, in 2005, following the Andijan events, the eviction of U.S. military base. But prior to that, Karimov's policy was pretty much pro-American. They were getting everything they wanted. You know, they wanted to good investment, blah. You know, investments are there. So they wanted the protection of their investments. It was always there. You know, this military route, operation in Afghanistan, fighting extremism and terrorism. So Karimov's jailing of hundreds of people with extremistic kind of point of view is not a joke. Yeah, it's not just like you may argue about the procedures, about a lot of unprofessionalism in while doing so. That is very much kind of a seemingly like a repressions. Yeah, but deeper in the society, he was the one who was controlling the radicalization in Uzbekistan. Whether if Washington really likes the way he's, the new president is dealing with radicalization at this moment, I'm not sure. So we have to see, you know, where these many things that Mirziyoyev is playing a lot with giving more freedoms to kind of allowing people to return, you know. So that's not a simple thing. Yeah, we can from the distance of time. We can judge Karimov's legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's too early to judge and to call something historical, which is kind of where we don't have any additional information. Mm-hmm. Let's see what he will come up with. Let's see what will be the talk and before calling anything historical and something.
Okay. There was lots of mention of Karimov era here and also comparison. Maybe let's talk a little bit about that after the break. Now, similar to President Mirziyoyev, as we know, as you said, Alisher, in his early days, the late Uzbek President Islam Karimov, too, have tried to improve his ties with America. And to some extent, he succeeded until the Andijan mass killing in 2005. So what are the elements that can help to reestablish these relations? And what are the potential elements of disagreements? We will continue the discussion talking about these and many other questions shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. We are talking about U.S.-Uzbek relations in the light of President Mirziyoyev's forthcoming visit to Washington, D.C. Joining me in the discussion are from Washington, Nobahar Imamova, editor in Ankara with the Uzbek Service of Voice of America. From Europe, Alisher Siddiq, the director of Arab Heritage Uzbek Service, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog called Kishlak Ovaziyai Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Prague. Welcome back, colleagues. Now, let's look back a little bit. Maybe, Bruce, we can start with you to the history of U.S.-Uzbek relations to examine where this relationship is headed going forward. As you know, Karimov's relations with U.S. Was way better in his early days of the presidency until it got worse. So what are the lessons are there for Mirziyoyev to learn from that relationship?
When Karimov was trying to court better ties with the U.S., I mean, for one thing, I wouldn't expect that Uzbekistan would ever go to the lengths under Mirziyoyev that it did under Karimov in the early years. The example I always use of how ludicrous, really, Karimov tried to pursue better ties with the U.S. was there was a vote that the U.S. put in front of the U.N. About putting international sanctions on Cuba. And only two other countries voted with the U.S. on that, Israel and Uzbekistan. And that was in the mid-90s. And I was like, well, what is Uzbekistan's interest in having international sanctions on Cuba? I mean, it didn't seem to make any sense. But that was just that was an indication of how much Uzbekistan wanted to have great ties with the United States. Karimov didn't want Russia to come back in and have any influence, certainly in his country, but generally in Central Asia. And I think he saw the U.S. as his best bet, remembering that China really wasn't that much of a power in the early 1990s. And then Karimov saw the U.S. as the best bet at keeping Russian influence out. You know, good friends with the U.S. meant you might have a better chance of resisting Moscow's efforts. Karimov let a lot of NGOs that were based in the U.S. come in and to different degrees they were able to do some work. And I would suggest that would be one of the indications of how much Mirziyoyev is willing to court better ties with the U.S. Will he let Human Rights Watch come back into the country? I don't expect he would let all the NGOs that were present in the late 1990s that were U.S.-based back into Uzbekistan, maybe ever. But if he could start to let a few in, and if the U.S. could bargain with some, you know, with him a little bit about greater business interest, but it has to be coupled with being able to do have some NGOs that are in there that are able to do some work with whatever, with civil society, with independent media, something, you know, and say, you know, it's part of the bargain. You can get the investment and we'll try to work with that. But you've also got to show us that you're willing to do this. Karimov was willing to do it. Yeah. Admittedly, you know, after once Andijan happened, he kicked them all out. And we all of us sitting in the studio not only remember that well, but it affected all our organizations, both our organizations. So, you know, we'll have to see how hard the U.S. administration is going to press Mirziyoyev to let non-economic, non-business groups come back into Uzbekistan and set up shop.
Bruce, you kind of not very much sure that Uzbek-American relationship will reach to that point under Mirziyoyev. Why is that? Why you think so?
Different political situation entirely. You know, I mentioned that China wasn't very strong. Well, it is now. You know, economically, China and Russia are the two countries with the greatest interest in Uzbekistan, and the Uzbek government will be well aware of that. The U.S. cannot replace either one of those, does not want to replace either one of those countries anyway. I'm sure it could if they had the will, but why? They don't rate that on the same level in geopolitics as Moscow and Beijing would. So this is, you know, there's always going to be a limit to how far Mirziyoyev could go in his relations with the U.S. anyway, without incurring the displeasure of either Russia or China or both. And remember, you know, Uzbekistan is a member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Yeah. So, you know, this is one of those vehicles where they can kind of press Uzbekistan to not get too close to America. Remembering that Karimov also used the Shanghai Cooperation Organization to get the U.S. out of Uzbekistan after Andijan, too. Mm. So, you know, they have some say in that. And I mentioned Mirziyoyev, as much as he might want American money or something like that, he's going to be pretty cautious about what he's willing to agree to in Washington on this trip.
No, Bahar, what's your take on what the Bruce has been saying? And also, what is the limitation? How far can Mirziyoyev go with this relationship?
I agree with Bruce. I think that relationship between Karimov and America was very complicated. It was a long, tumultuous relationship. There were short periods of love and understanding, but it vanished, you know, as Uzbekistan. Uzbekistan was very quick to remind that it was also a classic dictatorship. So as much as Washington tried to understand Karimov, they struggled to accept the overall, you know, approach. And Karimov had a long list of grievances, you know, against the United States. Every time someone would visit from Washington, he would have those 2.5-hour mission sessions, you know, consistently. I would hear this again and again. He would talk for more than 2 hours and he would give 5 minutes to the other side. Now, America sees Mirziyoyev as a completely different personality, and I'm not over exaggerating this. They see him as a good communicator. They see him as someone who leans forward. They see him as someone who listens, who wants to know what they have to say about about him, about his doings in the country, about his reform agenda, for example. And as far as I know, he's also been candidly actually discussing the difficulties in executing his plans. For example, you know, we know that he told Americans that it'll be really difficult to go through, and he needs their support. I mean, Mirziyoyev wants America's political support, you know, overall moral support of this reform agenda. And I think that's...
Nobahar, how this political support is going to look like?
It will be in the form of constant, you know, in shaping his image. One way would be that, you know, not only here, but sort of like telling the Uzbek people that we like what your leader is doing. We think he's on the right path. We think that you're on the right path. We see change in Uzbekistan. That'll be one way of doing it. And also, I guess, by delivering some concrete support, like, for example, you know, more U.S. investment support through other international bodies, America's support now, you know, in terms of ending the forced labor through ILO, America's support through the World Bank. Also, I think the role of the Uzbek community here in the United States is also going to be major. If Tashkent is smart enough, they will come up with a policy to engage and involve this huge body of Uzbeks here in the United States. They haven't really been successful at that yet, but, you know, Mirziyoyev also seems to have convinced, at least for now, Washington that he's not pro-Russian. They don't fear that he's leaning too much on Russia. They actually believe that he wants to have as balanced relationship with the world as possible. That's what I heard from, you know, Undersecretary Thomas Shannon, who has met him several times now. He's confident that Mirziyoyev has not only a national vision, but he's got a regional vision, he's got an international vision. They see Mirziyoyev as someone who not only wants to be a regional leader, by the way, he wants to be seen as a completely different leader that the former Soviet countries has never seen before. I want to correct myself. I said earlier that the last time, you know, Uzbek president was in the White House was in 2004. It was in 2002. So yeah, it was 16 years ago, not 14.
Yeah. Now, Alisher, you jump in here. So what is your thoughts on what Nobahar was saying in terms of how much Mirziyoyev is prepared to do to get the support from the type of support that Nobahar was mentioning from Washington, D.C. in terms of politics and all these things. Also, the celebratory news that we are getting from Washington, D.C. or elsewhere, maybe if there are more of that type news these days in Tashkent about how major breakthrough is this that he's going to Washington, D.C. Apart from that, at the end, you know, the things will nail down on what are the common interests, what are the clashing points. So what is your thought on that aspect, Alisher?
Oh my gosh, that's the very difficult part, yeah, really. I mean, of course he wants political support, and it's pretty obvious, yeah. So it is, as Nobahar's saying, it's a very rare visit, yeah. So he had to visit because there's a new president there, and a new president here. They have to meet each other, right? So that's nothing kind of, unusual in it. In this sense, so they have to meet, they have to talk. So Mirziyoyev traveled to Turkey, then Erdogan came to Uzbekistan. They were talking about billions of investments. When we talk to Turkish investors, they say no, please, sorry. So I think the security capacity is still there. You know, the interest of America in Uzbekistan is very much kind of a limited to the security issues in Afghanistan, and that was the case for decades now. So I think this Afghanistan will be a very big talk around it. You know, during the presidential campaign, we saw that some candidates didn't even know what Uzbekistan is, right? So on that level. So I really don't know about Trump's deep knowledge in the region and in Uzbekistan in particular. So that will be just a chance to shake hands, to show what Uzbeks look like, probably introduce some Uzbek cuisine. You know, that's too early in the day to make big policy shifts and in that way.
Yeah.
So let them meet and then talk. Of course, for Mirziyoyev, that's a very big thing. The guy was the guy who never got out of cotton fields, doing all this forced labor, like for the past how many years. and walked, never leaving Uzbekistan for anywhere, to anywhere, yeah? For him to travel over the ocean, it's already a big accomplishment. So, look, I mean, the guy is from Kalkhoz.
I am from...
Nothing changed. Like,
we are from Kalkhoz.
Nothing changed. Nothing changed.
I am from Kalkhoz, too.
No, I mean, really, I mean, he never traveled that far, right? I mean, for him, it's even... there's many, many things, you know... in that trip, yeah? Maybe he wants to go to see how McDonald's looked like. I don't know. You know, on the local level, his vision of the world is pretty much limited. We see that his policies inside Uzbekistan is mostly reminiscent from the Soviet things, yeah? So the guy is just opening up his brains at this point. To how extent he can do it, you know, that's a very much physiological question.
Yeah.
We actually got used to reformist presidents like Saakashvili, whoever, those who are very fluent in English, though who are very relaxed, know all these, you know, manners of talks and everything. Is he the kind of man? No, I don't know. He's like from very different... background.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So let's see how that shaped into Western culture.
Okay. Yeah. But I think we should also be looking into concluding this discussion. But I have one person from Kalkhoz here next to me, Bruce Panier.
It's a cute lot.
Bruce, what do you see in terms of, like, if this relationship has to go forward in a positive manner, what are the elements which can bring them and what are the elements that can break it down?
Well, you know, let's face it, the U.S. and Uzbekistan, no matter what their relationship has been like, generally in the last 17-18 years, that there has always been a security link between the two countries. The ties between U.S. military and the Uzbek military and intelligence organizations hasn't really been fazed by anything practically that's happened. Andijan, all that stuff. I mean, they glossed over that real fast. So there's already a foundation for this. They have common interests in security in the region and what's happening in Afghanistan, so they can build on this kind of stuff. You know, we were talking about what... you know, you mentioned what could Uzbekistan possibly be trading? How much money would Mirziyoyev have when he goes over there? For what it's worth, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Uzbekistan opened a trade house in New York even late last year or something like that. So there is a business representation again in the United States, and I imagine he can build on that. You know, I mean, I remember that because they were importing Dini from Uzbekistan, and I thought that was probably the best thing that they could bring. As a DEFCON from the Kishlok, I was extremely pleased that they were bringing Dini to America.
How about the Arizona type of melons?
the Dini in Central Asia are still better than anything that we grow in America. Oh, yeah. I'm willing to go that far. You know, and there's one other good thing, since this will probably be my last comment, and we'll give it over to our guests. And I say this completely green with envy some Uzbek media organizations are going to be using Voice of America's information for their reports on Mirziyoyev's visit. And I know that Navbahar can give us more on that. Mm-hmm. But I was pleased and gritting my teeth at the same time when I found out that there are Uzbek media organizations have said that they're going to do based a lot of their reporting on what VOA and Navbahar are reporting about the visit. So that's right. Also a good sign. In the past, you would never have heard anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. Okay, guys, it was really a fascinating discussion. But final words, let's start with you, Navbahar. I know you want to touch on something. Now, yes, this is the first experience that he's going to have in America in the White House. A big meeting, lots of expectations, lots of handshakes and all these things. Apart from that, so what is the likely outcome from this couple of days of visit to Washington, D.C.?
They will get to know each other. Okay. Washington will get to see President Mirziyoyev from up close. Mirziyoyev, as Adishar mentioned, will get to know Washington, what it is like here, what it is like to be here. He'll get to breathe the air of Washington. He will feel the enormity of every, I guess, issue and issues here. So I think that getting to know each other, I think we should not underestimate that. That's a very important thing to have. And also, you know, they will get to highlight the changes, their goals. goes there. There will be a joint statement, by the way, at the end of the day on Wednesday, I believe, from the White House. And so this will be, we're expecting a long list of things that both countries want to do or they have started to do. So that joint statement then will serve as an indicator of what's to come next. I'm not expecting any major, you know, deals. There won't be any strategic partnership deals being signed, but they will be talking about it. This is a conversation to talk about this. I have, just to continue Bruce's point, I have some really good news. Yes, our content has been getting picked up for the past several months by Uzbek media. Uzbek media has opened for us, and, you know, I see our articles, our video popping up all over the online Uzbekistan. But as of yesterday, I am accredited by the Foreign Ministry of Uzbekistan. I am now, yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I just got an accreditation, and we got a letter. Of the letter was sent by Uzbek ambassador to our director, Amanda Bennett. So this morning, we basically all woke up to really good news here. We're not opening any bureau. We're not hiring any stringers in Uzbekistan, but as the Uzbek government telling us that they're open for the Voice of America. We can go in, report from the country, we can engage, we can cooperate with national media. The Uzbek National News Agency has wants to sign a memorandum of understanding with us. They have sent their drafts. It's their initiative without the interference of the government, even though we know that UZA, Uzbek News National News Agency, is a government entity. It's the primary, you know, official outlet, but they have reached out themselves and they want to formalize this relationship because they've been using our content now with full credit for several months. So those two things are happening here as far as we're concerned, and we're really excited about this. And I just looked at the list of foreign correspondents you know, listed by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Tashkent, and there are 41 of them, and I will be the only representing U.S. media, and they have never accredited anyone based in the United States like this before.
You have lots of exciting information, and you'll keep that for the end of the discussion, and we have to have another discussion on this topic. Very, Alisha, final and briefly, please. So what is the best outcome that you see coming out of this visit? Briefly, please.
The best outcome for Uzbeks, I mean, I always look at what's going to change on the ground. The best outcome, if Mirziyoyev comes back and, you know, starts some democratic reforms, in terms of parliament, reducing his own powers, you know, reducing the power of his relatives, all this stuff that is never, you know, vanish around. We'll see. So this, like, regular things that is already written in the books, how the good democratic country should look like. So that's what I'm what's the best outcome.
Okay, so this is the best outcome from the Uzbek perspective, American perspective, Bruce. So what's the best outcome for them, for the White House?
Boy, now that's a tough one, because this is a different kind of administration than I'm used to in the past. You know, I like I said, I would think if the Uzbek authorities would be willing to open up the country not only to business interests, but some of the civil society groups that used to work in the past. And that's great news about you, Nabar, that you got the accreditation. That's also a good step in the right direction there. But if they'd be willing to let some of the other groups come back in, even on a very low-level, small-time operations, then that would be, you know, because, I mean, the National Democratic Institution and all kinds of other people used to work in Uzbekistan. If they'd let some of those groups come back in, you know, to start work in Tashkent, or if they would at least talk about it favorably, then I would consider that to be a good step in the right direction. And I know Uzbek officials, when they've come out there in the past, have told, you know, their own nationals, former nationals, people who left the country, that they're welcome to come home and there's no charges against them. But it would be good if Mirziyoyev repeated that again. You know, and a lot of people ended up in the U.S. after they fled Andijan, and they ended up in the U.S. It would be good if he would remind them that, you know, that was in the past, and these things are all seem to be a little bit unfair, and you're welcome to come back to your homeland again. It would mean a lot to the the U.S. to hear that and to the Uzbek population that was forced to flee their country under Karimov and resettle in the United States, I think.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, called Kishlak Awazi. Also, big thanks goes to Nobahar Imamova.
Thank you so much.
Okay, and also, big thanks goes to Alisher Sadiq, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service. It was a fascinating discussion. Thank you very much. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.